Here comes Payet.
Beckham saw Sullivan off his line. Oh! That is absolutely phenomenal.
Now Suarez in behind Ward. He's gone for glory.
Oh. It's Alan Shearer. That's the way to finish it. Perez! What a time to get his first Anfield goal of the season.
And Roddy O'Carroll. And away from him. Still.
Premier League show on URN Sport.
Yes, hello and welcome to the Saturday Premier League show here on URN. Today I am your host Jack Newman. I'm joined in the studio by Tyler, Dom and Alex, and of course Chris is just running a tad late, but he will be joining us very, very shortly. Tyler, you're watching the Hull versus Burnley game. Dom, you are of course watching the Everton versus Sunderland game, and Alex, as a Chelsea fan, you are watching the Chelsea versus Swansea game. We're going to go to you first, Tyler. You've been watching the Hull versus Burnley game. That game was 0-0 at half time. What do you make of the first half?
Not the best of games, it must be said. Very few chances. In fact, I think only two shots on target. Hull came closest actually towards the end of the first half with a decent free kick. I think it was Groyski, that's probably not how you pronounce his name, but yeah, he's gone close. And he actually looks the best player on the pitch at the moment, the January signing. Second half, hopefully there'll be some goals, but at the moment it kind of has 0-0 written all over it.
We're going to go over to you now, Alex. You're watching the Chelsea versus Swansea game. Chelsea took the lead with a Fabregas goal in the 19th minute, and Swansea managed to get one back, peg Chelsea back by scoring it very, very late on. At the end of stoppage time in the first half, what have you made of the Chelsea game so far?
Well, I mean, the score is 1-1, but it by no means tells the story of this game. Chelsea started the game very strongly, really took control early on. Some great chances even before that Fabregas goal. 19th minute came around, Fabregas scored that fantastic goal. Hazard really, although it was Pedro who assisted, Hazard was the creator of it. And then after that, where some teams would probably slack off after Chelsea scored their opening goal, they really didn't. They instead really opened up the game. They started being more attacking, if anything, more aggressive. Great late on chance from Pedro, again, which resulted in a fantastic block from Mawson. And the goal, the Swansea equaliser, really did come out of nowhere. Free kick from just inside the Chelsea half. Sigurdsson played a cracking ball right over the top into the path of Llorente, who scored a great header. I mean, the fault has really got to go to Moses because he completely stopped tracking Llorente and allowed him to score that goal. But it came out of nowhere. Chelsea started the second half very, very strongly here. Hazard had a fantastic shot denied by Fabianski in the opening minute. But we'll have to see what happens. But I still can't see this game going anywhere past Chelsea, Jack.
We're going to quickly go over to Dom. You're watching the Everton versus Sunderland game down at Goodison Park.
I've been watching a very very intriguing game. It's quite entertaining. Everton going in 1-0 up at half-time. The dominant side, it must be said. But Sunderland had a bit of a resurgence around 30 minutes. And the goal came at the correct time because it Sunderland they were coming back into the game. However, Ross Barkley has been the standout man of the half for me. He was magical with everything he touched. The goal itself came from a ball by Tom Davis, 50 yards wide. Absolutely stunning, finding Seamus Coleman in space. Lovely cutback for Idrissa Gueye, his first goal for Everton, hammering it in past Pickford.
Hi, I'm Paul Merson, Asbin footballer, and you are listening to URN Sport.
Obviously, one story that has got the whole of the football world really talking about it is, of course, the Claudio Ranieri sacking. Guys, what are your thoughts? Do you think he should have been sacked?
No. He shouldn't have been sacked, and it's very upsetting to see because it just proves to you how much the soul has been drained away from football. You think after the success that he had last season, the bond he had with the players, the amazing chemistry they had, that Leicester would give him more time. I mean, I think you said it earlier, as a Leicester fan, you prefer to get relegated with Ranieri than sack him and stay up.
I mean, I think it's a bit of a bizarre time to sack him.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, you never, as a football manager, you never really want to get sacked. But, you know, what are we, 25 games into the season now? And yes, okay, so Ranieri's not living up to what he achieved last year. But in my mind, last year was just a freak occurrence that will probably not ever happen again in our entire life. I think, you know, you look at the odds of it happening at the start of the season, 5,000 to 1. And there's so many people who just put a bet on that and it came up trumps. But yeah, it's a weird situation. Leicester have not been doing as well as we all know that they can do from last season. I don't think they're going to find a suitable replacement, and I don't think that there's going
to
be, like,
they don't have time to implement the change.
No, yeah, exactly.
This is it
that they want.
But the thing is, to play devil's advocate for a moment, there was a story which leaked recently, which said that there were four leading players for Leicester who approached the board to almost, led to many fans becoming angry, because it is almost like a betrayal of Ranieri, someone who did so much for the club. But at the same time, as the board, you've got to balance your own interests in staying up. And if the players won't play under someone, well, as sad and as disgraceful as it is, there's very little you as a board and as the owners can actually do about it. And we saw that with Chelsea last season, where as much as the fans still were staying with Mourinho to an extent, once you lose the players, if he did lose the players, there's nothing which can really be done at that stage. And at that stage, it's about damage control more than anything. But time will tell. We'll have to see. If Leicester do come out and start playing very, very well, now Ranieri's gone, then we'll know there'll have been a problem in the dressing room. But it's all allegations at the minute. No one really knows what's happening on the inside.
Yeah, I think you make a very valid point there in terms of losing the dressing room. But I think to counter that, I'd say I didn't actually watch the first half of the Leicester Sevilla game, but I watched the second half, and they didn't look like a team that weren't fighting for their manager. I'd say they're the opposite. They, you know, Leicester—they look more like the Leicester of last season, dangerous on the counter attack, well organised, working hard, fighting for their manager. So, for me, the idea that they—I know it's been reported by reliable sources like the BBC and Sky Sports—but I find it hard to believe that the players, after such a, you know, good performance, a good result in Seville, met with the chairman. I think the timing for me is very bizarre. And I think Leicester's assistant manager, or their former assistant manager and now caretaker manager, has actually come out and denied the player armrest. So, yeah, who knows what's going on, to be honest.
It's also so sad to see so few players come out and give thanks to Ranieri.
Yeah.
Who is Schmeichel's the only player?
Schmeichel's the only player so far that I know of who has come out and actually said, thanks, boss, you won us the league, thank you for everything that you've done.
Yeah.
You turned me into the player that I am today and all of this stuff. He posted a picture on his Instagram and...
Yeah, I mean...
Some appreciation would be nice.
Yeah, there's also been a... keeping on the topic of, you know, the player revolt and whatever, Schmeichel has come out to the BBC in an interview saying, yeah, the players had no problem with Ranieri. You know, we were thoroughly behind him. We didn't see any reason for him to be getting sacked. Yes, we're in a bit of a relegation battle at the moment, but, you know, in theory, if they bring someone in, they're still going to be in that relegation battle, in my mind. I don't want to blame it on just one player, but obviously we've seen the impact that N'Golo Kante has had at Chelsea this season.
I was waiting a while to bring that up.
we've seen the impact that he's had. You know, he at times looks like he's just two players on his own. He covers so much ground really, really well, and he is a brilliant, brilliant centre defensive mid. I don't want to blame it on, you know, the fact that Leicester are not doing so well, just the fact that he's gone, but he definitely does have a massive part to play.
I think it's sort of a combination of different factors, of which Kante did play an absolutely massive part. We saw how cracking he was last season he was for Leicester, and we've seen how amazing he's been this season for Chelsea. I mean, today he's really held down that defensive midfield position. But you can't also... I think it's a combination of just the team, the management, external factors and Kante, which have all come together and sort of mixed, as well as a rut of recently bad form, which has led to them being so low down the table. Because they didn't start well, but they did not start anywhere near as badly as they were playing now in the last few games, which is really disappointing to see. And... especially after the Seville game, it really is surprising. Because I think if there's one thing you shouldn't do to a team, it's sack their manager after you've actually had a fairly good performance.
We're going to head back over to the KC Stadium. Hull versus Burnley. Is there any signs of a goal in that one with 20 minutes left?
Yeah, it's actually a penalty to Hull. Handball by Michael Keane. Can't argue with that. It was a blazing handball. Tom Hoddleston's stepping up to take it. Probably would be goal! A bit against the run of play.
Sorry, Pedro has just scored from about 30 yards out against Swansea. From out of nowhere, completely blasts it into the bottom left corner. Chelsea 2, Swansea 2-1.
He tucked it away nicely under the keeper. 1-0 Hull, Tom Hoddleston penalty.
Hi, I'm Lauren Herrier, your SU Sports Officer, and you're listening to URN Sport.
We are going to go over to Tyler now. There's been a goal between Hull versus Burnley.
Finally, this game has come to life. About time there were goals. Michael Keane equalised for Burnley. Floated corner, I think it's Robbie Brady who put it in. Good delivery. Chested it down like a striker. Really, really good chest control from centre-back. And lashed it in. Good finish. So, yeah, it's in the balance. 1-1 could go either way.
No. Romelu! Oh, what a goal!
We're going to go back over to Dom. There's been a goal.
Oh, Romelu powers through the defence. He's just too strong. He's too strong for Oviedo. Marches past him, gets close range, and is through the legs of Pickford. Good finish. I think Everton are safe now. Oh, Oviedo's got no chance there. Poor lad. Seems the ex-Everton players aren't quite up to Everton standard.
We are now going to be talking a bit about, of course, the EFL Cup final happening tomorrow at Wembley. That is a 4:30 kickoff between Manchester United and Southampton. Guys, do we expect anything but a Man United win in this one?
Well, it is, of course, Liverpool's B team playing on the, Sunday, or like future Liverpool team anyway. Manchester United, I think, apart from the loss to Hull, on an 18 unbeaten streak, if you don't count that result. And I hate to say it, but United do look really like balanced. They look really good at the moment. Like Pogba, Ibrahimovic is looking like a good partnership. Ibra, you know, probably will score tomorrow. You know, you can't put it past him. He is their main source of goals, but he's doing the job for them. Defensively, they look so solid as well. Obviously, they've got, in my opinion, the best goalkeeper in the league in David Gea. Midfield looks well balanced. Mkhitaryan's out, but he doesn't really start for them as much. Herrera's looked really good for them. And of course, you know, you've got players, you know, who have played in finals all their lives. You know, you just look at, you know, Man United's B team. And even they are, like, so much better than Southampton's first team just because of, like, you know, who Man United have bought over the years. It really is phenomenal. This is Southampton's first final in a really, really long time. So I think for the fans, it's more of, like, being there, more of, like, you know, taking in the atmosphere of being at Wembley. I can't imagine United losing it, especially with someone like Jose Mourinho, who has won so many trophies. But Southampton will definitely give it the all. Man United, if they were to win it, you know, would have worked for it. You know, they would have, like, bleeded for it, because Southampton, I reckon, will give it the all. But, you know, they just got too much quality, that United side. So it's got to be them, surely, which I do hate admitting.
One thing I would say, though, it's the cup. You can never tell. quality, when the FA Cup comes round, the League Cup, or EFL, I should say, Cup come round, in both those competitions, it's so, so random. We've seen this with Lincoln City currently being in the quarterfinals. So you really can't tell. I mean, Man United's squad is evidently stronger than Southampton's, and you'd expect on paper for Man United to win pretty much every single time. But you really don't know. Southampton haven't been brilliant, granted. But we'll have to see. But I really wouldn't count them out of this game. I think it could go either way, and I wouldn't necessarily think it's going to be an easy game if Manchester United do win.
Yeah, I think you probably have to back United, especially with Mourinho's track record in cup competitions. I mean, he's won the League Cup quite a few times, so it's a competition he clearly likes and respects. He always puts strong teams out. And it'd be a big deal, I think, for United to get a trophy under their belt. They're still in the FA Cup, still in the Europa League, so it could actually turn out to be a very promising season. Even if they don't finish in the top four, I think two or three trophies would be a very, very good season for United, no doubt about that.
We're going to move on to talk, of course, about the Europa League action and, of course, the Champions League action. Now, we'll talk about, since we have been talking about Leicester quite a lot, we'll get them out of the way with first. Leicester, I wouldn't say it was a bad performance against Seville, but I mentioned it earlier, you know, Seville having won the Europa League three times in a row with, obviously their manager's moved on now, Unai Emery is managing PSG, and we saw what they did to Barcelona. But Sevilla were never going to be an easy team to play up against for Leicester.
As a Liverpool fan, I actually hate Sevilla. Like, just after what happened in the Europa League final last year, it was unbelievable. I they convinced Alberto Moreno at halftime to join their team. But that's a story for another time. Sevilla, I thought, were brilliant on the night, it has to be said. Leicester, must be said, were quite lucky to get the goal, but they're just clinical. They had the one chance, they took it. Really well worked goal from Leicester, but Kasper Schmeichel was brilliant throughout the night. You know, it was just chance after chance after chance for Sevilla. Schmeichel even saving a penalty as well. The defense just seemed quite leaky, and I think even like that miscommunication between where Christian Fuchs nearly scored an own goal trying to head the ball back to Schmeichel. If it wasn't for Schmeichel, who I do think is actually a very underrated keeper in the league in general, it could have and should have been a lot more, it has to be said. But they do have that key away goal, which just makes the whole sacking of Ranieri even more baffling. It's like, why sack him now? It just really doesn't compute, it has to be said. And they have got the away goal, you know, and so they could have gone into that home fixture in the second leg, you know, with a bit more optimism. Like, we've got the away goal. If we keep it to 1-0, we're through to the next round. We're through to the quarterfinals. But instead, they just seem to have shot themselves in the foot. And I really can't see, even with this new manager, whoever they bring in, how they will be able to beat Sevilla, given the circumstances now.
Manchester City, they hosted Monaco in what can only be described as a fantastic game. From the neutral's perspective, obviously I sat down and watched this game, and you know, I going into the game had backed Monaco to, you know, give Man City a good run for their money. They're not a side to be, you know, laughed at. They are doing quite well in Ligue 1 at the moment in France, and you know, they came out all guns blazing. And what a game it was, guys. 5-3 it ended to Manchester City, obviously having a 2-goal lead going into the away leg. And now they know that, you know, Monaco, yes, they have 3 away goals, but Are we writing Monaco off now?
No, definitely not. I mean, Monaco playing at home, they've certainly got an advantage in the next game, as well as the fact that they've got those 3 away goals. That's something you can't discount that.
Mm.
Yeah, I think Guardiola even said in his post-match interview, City have to score if they're going to go through. Yeah. I don't think you can argue that. But Monaco will score, but you probably back City to score as well. So I think the fact that it's 5-3 and not 4-3 also gives City like quite a big cushion. So I back City to go there and get the job done. It could be anything, but I think City will get through.
It was still very, very poor from City though, to concede 3 at the Etihad. It's hopefully highlighted a problem which Manchester City will be able to use and improve upon, where they were leaking goals at the back, and it's very, very poor. Because Monaco are a good side, let's not underestimate Monaco whatsoever. I probably wouldn't say they're at the same level as Manchester City, and City should really, at home, been looking to do better, especially defensively. I mean, it was a great performance from both sides, but to concede 3 goals...
They have a very poor defence.
It was extremely poor to watch, and I think in the second leg, yes, they have this cushion, but they should absolutely be looking to defend their back.
Moving over now to the Europa League, obviously, we had 2 English sides competing in that tournament. We're going to talk about Man United first, and then we'll come on, of course, to Tyler's beloved Tottenham. But Man United going into the game, the away leg against St Etienne, they had a 3-0 lead. It looked quite comfortable as well. Henrik Mkhitaryan scoring in the 16th minute in the second leg, securing the victory for Man United. And, you know, St Etienne, really over both legs, didn't really look up to the races, although Man United did go down to 10 men in this game. So United threw in that game. Guys, what are your thoughts on United and the fact, of course, you know, looking forward into the next round of 16, they have drawn up against Rostov from Russia, who had quite a phenomenal season in their league last year. Some called them the Leicester of Russia, or they almost did a Leicester in the Russian league, but unfortunately it wasn't to happen for them. But they are still quite an impressive side. What are your thoughts in this one, you know, considering that Rostov went through on aggregate against Sparta Prague 5-1? One of the teams to give a notable mention to as well is Lyon. You know, coming away winning 7-1 in the second leg. That wasn't an aggregate score. That was just a second leg score at home to AZ Alkmaar. 11-2 on aggregate. Lyon, as well as Roma, as well as United, I think they are definitely some of the teams to be looking out for. So there are a lot of teams in the Europa League at the moment who are I'd say that they'd give any one of the favourites a good run for their money. One of those teams, however, isn't Tottenham. Tottenham had a rather disappointing performance. I mean, you touched on it earlier. Obviously, they've not had the best run of results since going to Wembley to play their European games, and it's been a bit of a up and down season for Tottenham, even though they do find themselves third in the Premier League.
I don't know what it is with Tottenham in Europe. We always seem to struggle in Europe. Obviously, went out in the group stage of the Champions League, and again, I mean, they're eighth in the league, eighth in the Belgian league. We should have absolutely hammered them. We've had strong teams in both legs. I think had Ali not been sent off, I think we probably would have got the win. But I don't say that with an awful lot of confidence. Just a bit of an embarrassment. But I'm just hoping this defeat will be a blessing in disguise and we can, you know, finish in the top form, go for the FA Cup. But yeah, embarrassing, absolutely embarrassing.
I mean, you look at it. I mean, Tottenham on the night had 25 shots, three of them were on target, and Ghent had five, and one of them was on target. Obviously, the first goal for Ghent was a Harry Kane own goal. But yeah, I completely agree. I mean, if Dele Alli hadn't have been sent off, I think the result might have been different.
That's an appalling turnover rate, though. Yeah. I mean, three on target from 25 shots is a huge, huge error. And that's going to have to be something they look at for the Premier League and hope this poor conversion rate doesn't continue into their upcoming fixtures.
No, I was going to say as well, just to add on to the point about Dele Alli, the tackle was actually really worrying, I have to admit, because, you know, he's had like lashes of anger out before, you know, when he elbowed, was it, Claudio Jakub towards the end of last season, and then he was suspended for the remaining games of the season. I think Dele Alli is obviously a wonderful player, but he's just got to stop doing dumb things like that. You know, he went in high, like, really obviously high, and then try to play like, oh no, I didn't.
He could have broken his leg.
He could have broken his leg. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It really was, and it's just like he's just got to keep a cool head at times, because obviously he's a wonderful prospect for England and for Tottenham as well. But you know, he shouldn't let like things like that, you know, get the better of him, I think. But no, you're right. I think it's not just Tottenham. I think Liverpool was one of the few teams actually that had a really good Europa League campaign. You know, you think of when was the last time an English team, apart from Liverpool last year, had a decent Europa League campaign. You know, Everton struggled in the Europa League and also the Premier League under Roberto Martinez. Liverpool's been doing that for years before last year, before Klopp. I don't know what it is, really. There just seems to be something about the Europa League which just doesn't seem to work with the Premier League. But I think the Rostov game will be interesting for United, because they have to travel to Russia and then back. You know, and that would just be a massive drain on the players. Then again, they do have the squad depth, so I'd imagine they'd be able to cope quite well, probably better than any of the other teams.